Illinois dropping down to south is Stark and Peoria counties. A little bit of rain activity in Tazewell and Logan and counties and just northwest of Decatur. And where that leads, we don't know. But there is that chance that we're going to get some rain later on. A low-pressure system and associated cold front are tracking east into Iowa and Missouri. And ahead of that front, scattered showers and thunderstorms are popping up across a good portion of the Midwest, especially right now in western Kentucky, western Tennessee, right along the border there, and in southeast Indiana, some thunderstorm activity. The rain activity should continue through this evening. Strong to severe storms are possible during that time, along with some heavy downpours. The cold front will slowly push east across Illinois tomorrow, and that causes rain chances to continue through tomorrow afternoon. Then after that, cooler air moves in behind the front for the end of the week, and will stay cloudy with a chance of showers, but the rain will move away in time for the weekend. So here's the forecast for the rest of this afternoon. Showers and thunderstorms are likely, and a high temperature reaching into the upper 80s. We had originally mentioned 85. It's already at 86 on Friends Plaza. Winds for the afternoon from the south around 15 miles an hour, gusting at times to around 25 miles an hour. Evening showers and thunderstorms remain likely tonight. Then after midnight, a chance of showers and thunderstorms. Low temperature overnight, 68 degrees. Winds will be out of the south at 10 to 15 miles an hour, gusting at times up to 25 in the evening. For tomorrow, mostly cloudy and a lingering chance of showers that'll stick with us for the next couple of days. Tomorrow's high, 78. Southwest winds at 15 to 20. Cloudy, chance of showers in 63 Wednesday night. Chance of showers Thursday, and a cloudy high of only 70 degrees. Then from there, the temperatures will start to pick up and get a little bit warmer, though not in the hot and humid range for the next couple of days. Mostly cloudy Thursday night and into Friday, then partly sunny for Saturday and Sunday into Monday with partly cloudy evenings. Friday's high only in the lower 70s, upper 70s for Saturday, around 80 on Sunday, and back to the lower 80s for a high on Monday. Thursday, Friday, and Saturday night's lows will be in the upper 50s and Sunday night in the low 60s. Right now, across the two-state area, temperatures are in the mid-80s and conditions are pretty muggy. 86 degrees under clouds in Pontiac and 85 in Bloomington, 85 in Decatur. They're all cloudy, along with Rantoul at 84 and Mattoon at 82. Danville has 82 with a little bit of sunshine, and it's partly sunny and 82 in Springfield. At Willard Airport, at the top of the hour, it was 85 degrees, the dew point at 69, and relative humidity at 58%. Winds from the southeast at 18 miles an hour, and the barometric pressure was rising at 29.72. The heat index right now is at 89 degrees at Willard. Right now on Friends Plaza, it's 86 degrees with a few clouds, a little bit of sun here and there, but mainly cloudy, and again, that chance of rain continues through the rest of this evening. It's 20 minutes before 1 o'clock. It's the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580. I'm Tom Rogers. Yesterday, the Supreme Court rejected a lawsuit brought by six states against a group of power companies. Connecticut, New York, and California were among the states that were suing over greenhouse gas emissions. As NPR's Chris Arnold reports, the court's decision also affirmed the authority of the Environmental Protection Agency.
The case is being called the Supreme Court's most important environmental ruling in years. The state governments were suing power companies to get them to cut greenhouse gas emissions, but the Supreme Court said no. It said such regulation should be left to the EPA.
Well, it's a big deal because of the reaffirmation of EPA authority.
Kenneth Green is with the conservative-leaning American Enterprise Institute. On the one hand, he's happy that the court said that you can't have all these different emissions lawsuits. He says that would have created a big, confusing mess. But he's nervous about the power that the EPA could have going forward as a sort of supreme regulator of greenhouse gases.
It really leaves one battlefield left over greenhouse gas emission controls, and that is, will the Congress step in to strip EPA of its ability to regulate the greenhouse gases, or won't they?
Congress recently failed to pass legislation regulating carbon emissions. Daniel J. Weiss is a fellow with the more liberal-leaning Center for American Progress.
The Supreme Court decision will continue EPA's momentum to set safeguards from global warming pollution from the very largest polluters.
Wei says the EPA is expected to start unveiling new regulations for coal-fired power plants this September. Chris Arnold, NPR News.
As a kid in Gloucestershire, England, back in the 70s and 80s, Simon Pegg idolized American action heroes. He obsessed over Star Wars. He was the kind of kid who would put up a picture of Carrie Fisher, Princess Leia, on his bedroom wall. In short, a nerd who would channel his boyhood passions into a career in comedy. As Renee Montaigne tells us, Simon Pegg is best known for what's become a cult classic, the zombie comedy Shaun of the Dead, as well as Hot Fuzz, the buddy cop film set in an English village where a missing swan is a call to action.
Yes, Mr. Stecker, we'll do everything we can. Can you describe it to me?
It's about 2 foot tall, long, slender neck.
Yeah.
Kind of orange and black bill.
Anything else?
Well, it's a swan.
Simon Pegg called his new memoir Nerd Do Well, A Small Boy's Journey to Becoming a Big Kid. It reads like a fanboy time machine. And you write that you and your friends would play Star Wars, and you identified with Luke Skywalker, even though Han Solo was the really infinitely cooler guy, as you put
it.
Although Luke Skywalker was pretty cool for a kid.
He's kind of whiny, though, wasn't he? He was sort of like, I want to go down the shop with my friends. And Han Solo was all like, hey, baby. But yeah, I kind of say in the book that maybe my identification with him was because I was a kind of a farm boy, miles from anything interesting, and maybe related to his desire to sort of get involved with the fight against the evil empire, which I kind of was. I was living in the countryside, and Gloucester, albeit a wonderfully historic and picturesque town, isn't really the center of activity anywhere.
In the book, you share the very first joke you ever told. You were, what, six?
That's right, yeah.
It was,
I do, I remember.
Your audience was, of course, your mother and grandmother.
I remember the intellectual process of thinking, hang on, this might be funny, you know, and kind of. But I did pretended that I didn't realize it was funny, though. I decided to go for pretending to be cute and sort of unworldly.
Tell us the joke.
We were talking about my friend, and I said, oh, his dad's a dentist. And she said, where does he practice? And I said, no, he's a real one. And, you know, it's a very simple joke, but I was only very young, and it just struck me as interesting that I seemed predetermined to seeing things that way, you know.
Yeah, but George Romero, of course, famous director of Night of the Living Dead, Dawn of the Dead, he would seem to have had quite an influence on you. Where did you come by your interest in zombie films? Was it from seeing the George Romero films?
Absolutely, and there was another sort of mythic hype attached to those films when I was a kid, because when VHS was introduced, the studios at the time were so short-sighted, they didn't think that video would last, and so they didn't attach any of the new releases to it. So what you basically had was a huge archive of various slasher films, and it was this treasure trove of gore and horror. And as a result, a sort of right-wing group banned a whole bunch of what they called video nasties. Some of them were great movies, like Evil Dead and Dawn of the Dead, and these films got lumped in just because they were full of crayon red blood, and nobody actually got the fact that there was some fun involved in them. And so the hunt for a copy of Dawn of the Dead was like the Holy Grail for teenagers in the 80s where I lived. And before I saw it, I knew all about it. I knew there was a guy who got his top of his head chopped off by a helicopter. I knew there was a moment when someone got their guts ripped out, and it was like, I've got to see this. This sounds great.
I gather from your memoir that even as a younger kid, you had access to the Encyclopedia of Horror.
That was the book I had. That had stills from Dawn of the Dead, which made it even more tantalizing. You know, the description of it as an American mall that becomes awash with blood. I remember the wording and thinking, God, I've got to see this. And there was also something kind of frightening about it as well. There was an idea that you could watch these films and be mentally scarred by them. You know, you'd hear rumors about it. These kids, they found a pirate video of Dawn of the Dead and they've all gone mad and killed each other. All these apocryphal stories that would go around school. Even to the point that my friend had a copy of Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And he came around to my house one day and knocked on the door and said, Simon, I've got it. I've got Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Do you want to come and see it? And I was so frightened to watch it that I actually said no. I was 12. Looking back, I'm glad, because that film is so scary and brilliant. But I'm glad I didn't watch it when I was 12, because I wouldn't have slept for a week.
Yeah. Well, Shaun of the Dead, which you co-wrote, that takes your character, who's kind of a slacker, I guess.
Yeah.
His friend Ed, who is worse than a slacker. What is Ed?
He's a slob, but one below a slacker.
All the characters in it sort of keep moving along in their own lives, even as there's a big zombie attack going on. Describe for us a moment in Shaun of the Dead where, you know, average life just suddenly appears in the midst of this attack by zombies.
We started off with the idea that even in the face of a zombie apocalypse, your life only changes in so much as you find yourself in the middle of a zombie apocalypse. Nothing else changes. You're still scared of spiders. You still like the same music. You still have the same little quarrels with people. There's a moment in the film when they realize that vinyl is quite a good weapon against zombies, and they decide to throw records at them. But they choose really carefully which ones to throw, because Shaun doesn't want to lose his original pressing of Blue Monday or the Stone Roses second album and all this kind of stuff. And so whilst these zombies are encroaching upon them, they're flicking through his records, choosing which ones to throw.
Purple Rain.
No.
Sign of the Times.
Definitely not.
The Batman soundtrack.
Throw it.
Sade.
That's Liz's.
Yeah, but she did dump you.
Hello? One part of you that sort of brings out the nerd in you is the whole question of certain zombie, a change in the form, I guess, which goes from zombies who, in your movie and most zombie movies, are very slow. You can practically, you know, just get past them. There are suddenly, in some zombie movies, fast zombies. And I gather this creates sort of a controversy among fans of the zombie genre.
It is a schism in the Church of the Undead. I personally don't like fast zombies because, A, it's fun to get annoyed about something so trivial, and B, I think it removes their appeal. You know, the zombie is a kind of tragic figure. The one thing that really, I think, has cemented the zombie as a popular creature in film history is that they're a bit pathetic, and you can actually feel a bit sorry for them. They don't have any agenda. They just do what they do, which is eat flesh. And when they start running around and screaming like velociraptors, you just don't care about them anymore. You just think, oh, go away, you noisy speed demon.
Yes. Thank you very much for joining us. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks, Renee. My pleasure. Not at all.
NPR's Renee Montagne spoke with actor, comedian, and now author Simon Pegg.
The countdown to the end of our fiscal year has begun. Our task this last month is to reach our membership goal of $2.1 million. Together, we've worked through significant challenges this year, and together we can close the gap and reach the goal by June 30th. Please mail a check to 300 North Goodwin, Urbana, 61801. Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday, the 21st of June, 2011, the summer solstice, first day of summer, North Pole, tilted towards the sun. Here in the Northern Hemisphere, we get the most hours of sunlight of the entire year. The poet Joseph Stroud wrote, "The day